Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. This is a weekly podcast that I use mostly as an opportunity to force my best friend to answer my questions to make my life better. And to be completely honest, I don't actually know what he gets out of it, but he's here. And his name is Soren, and he's the co-host. Say hi, Soren. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, as far as me making your life better, I feel like the results are also inconclusive there as well.
That's right. Things have only gotten worse. So you're going to hear our voices. You're also going to hear someone else chiming in and giggling warmly. Does he want to introduce himself?
Hey, Dan. It's Michael.
But does he really want to introduce himself?
Hey, Dan, it's Bacon.
There you go. Oh, Bacon is our CFO and has been with us every step of the way with this podcast. And really, people should know that he, like the day after the massive layoffs at Cracked happened, Bacon was like, you guys should do a podcast right now. This is a great time to capitalize on the personas that you had built and like the popularity that you have. And we were like, yeah, sounds good. A year and a half later, we did it.
Well, because we were like, well, we got to come up with like a really good theme. We got to come up with something that everybody's going to want to hear. And then we were eventually just like, you know, that sounds really hard. Let's
yeah,
just do it.
It does sound really hard. But this is the show. Quick question with Soren and Daniel. QQ with Sad. And you are our listeners, also known as, I really like this one, Quizian Quest. Is that?
Like Vision Quest.
Like Vision Quest, yeah. Do you guys know Vision Quest?
Yeah, I mean, I'm familiar with Vision Quest. It didn't occur to me at the beginning. Something about Quizian sounds different than Vision.
Yeah. It's nightmarish spilling out of the old mouth. It doesn't feel good to say.
Somebody online said that they were the Quick in the Muds.
What is that?
Stick in the Mud.
Oh, Stick in the Mud. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I hate that. That's not what they are.
Dan doesn't take input on these.
They are our wonderful listeners, and we really thank them for listening to the show, recommending it to their friends, donating to our Patreon if they do, but we also love, love, love when they review it on iTunes, because for reasons that I don't understand, that's important for the future, I guess. And so here's a review from someone named Carlsley, and they gave it 5 stars. There's no way I'm going to do this. I'm so sorry, Carlsley. I'm not going to do it in the meter that you want me to do it. I'm going to try my best, though. Dan and Soren make me smile. The stories are fun. The quips agile. With Bacon laughing all the while on this weekly podcast show. Garbage trucks adopting dogs. Deep sea fishing. Mouths with frogs. Vampire raps and Emmy nods on this weekly podcast show. Highest praise I'm here to preach. Dan's a grump. Soren, a peach. Hire Vince at Silicon Beach. From this weekly podcast show.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's so good.
It's very sweet, right?
Yeah, Vincent gets a nod in it. Everybody gets, I'm a peach. I'm fine with that. Grump's not so great for you, but I mean, everybody else comes out clean.
I get the grump vibe. I'm often very sleepy on this podcast and rarely want to participate in it, but I'm going to turn that around. Because that is not the brand that I want to put out in the world. But anyway, thank you, Carlsley, for that wonderful 5-star review. We're going to ask each other a bunch of questions today about meditation and power. And as usual, we're going to surprise each other with a few questions. But before all that, just very generally checking in. Soren, how's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. I've got something in my walls. Something's living in my walls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can hear it at night. So it's clearly something nocturnal. And when I was like hunting for it underneath my house, I didn't see how maybe it got in. And then I can't find its access point, basically. But then I went up into my attic, and which I never do because it's really gross and scary up there. And there was, I saw its eye. I saw it just for a second. The flashlight shone on something that reflected. And I was like, well, that's something unique up here. And then it moved and disappeared. And so I know it's up there. So I put a trap up there for it, a humane trap, thinking, I will catch this thing and I will drop it off in Atwater
Village. What do you think
Village.
It is? Just like an eye with feet?
Yeah, it's like some transcendental, transparent eyeball. Just okay. Living up there. I think it's a rat. I think it's a mouse or a rat. But I put out peanut butter for it and it was not interested in the peanut butter that I had given. I think because the peanut butter has no sugar or salt in it. I don't even like this fucking peanut butter.
You guys are very specific with your peanut butter.
It's not like the good kind. It's not... Jif or something like that. If this is the organic you got to stir this shit for 6 minutes kind.
Yeah.
And it's...
Is that when you open the peanut butter, is there like a lake on top of it, just like a wetness?
Yeah. Yeah, there's been an oil spill.
Are there a lot of rats or mice where you live?
No, because we have feral cats in my neighborhood, which pretty much take care of all that.
There were rats around my old place in Los Angeles, and I didn't know it for most of the time. Like, for years, I just had no idea, and then they just started doing construction across the street from my building, and suddenly there were rats everywhere because they were living underground, I guess. And they were like, hey, someone fucked up our shit, so, like, this pool seems nice. We're going to hang out here now.
Oh, that's awful. It's just like a Hamlin Town...
Yes.
Street of rats coming towards your apartment.
Well, yeah. So that sucks. I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I feel like I have news that you should ask me about.
Okay.
Like, I feel like something new in my life happened recently, and I was public about it on social media, and it's a huge deal, and I can't bring it up because I'm humble. So, like, you have to.
Sure.
So I can reluctantly talk
Dan,
about it.
Dan, how do you feel about the Cats trailer coming out?
No.
That was the sandbagging you, my friend. You got nominated for an Emmy.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, Soren, I didn't know you noticed that. Yeah, the show got nominated for 9 Emmys. Thank you so much for noticing.
But you in particular, an episode that you... Wait, hold on. I don't even know how it works. 9 of your episodes got nominated?
No, we got nominated in 9 different categories, and the show submits entries for all of those categories. I have no say over what gets submitted, but they submit one for, like, this is what we want to be nominated for show. Like, we pick one show of the season that is eligible to be nominated, and this is a separate one that we want to be nominated for writing in particular. We also have like directing and editing nominations as well, and that's how we got into the 9 categories. We just submit wherever we can, and we're really thrilled that the editors and directors for this episode we did with this weird Japanese mascot called Chiton, they got nominated. That's very exciting because that was such a fun project that, like, all of the writers loved. It was my coworkers Julie and Sina, their baby, and it just came out great. And we're all very happy for the recognition that the writers, directors, and editors get for that particular project. But we're also nominated for writing, which is you can't tell because this is a podcast, but I'm pointing at myself with both of my thumbs. It's a thing that I'm a part of. And really thrilled about that. I think the crazy thing is, like, because before I came here, the show had been nominated for and won Emmys, so it's not like it wasn't the largest surprise in the world when they announced that we were nominated again this year. And it's also like late night's a very small category. It's a very specific category with like 9 possible shows that could go into it. But the thing that I'm still smiling about and mentally grappling with is less about like the nomination itself, which does feel wonderful, and more like I get to go to the Emmys, which is a thing.
That's what I was going to ask. That's so cool.
I never thought was going to happen, even though, like, and you're in the same path where you've been writing for a very long time. Like, it's, if you want to write professionally and you're writing in the TV space, it should be in the back of your mind. Is like, this is a thing that might happen one day. And I've been writing professionally since I was 22 years old and had no plans of stopping. But even still, I didn't intellectually think I would ever be at the Emmys, and I still don't.
Right.
I still think that one of my bosses might sit me down and be like, hey champ, bad news. We can only afford so many plane tickets. You understand, right? And I'd be like, yeah, no, of course.
Right.
I'll stay home. Don't worry about it. I'm not supposed to be at the Emmys.
I know what I am. I should not be there. That's so cool. It's gotta be very, very surreal. That's the pinnacle of television writing, is if you win an Emmy. And you could potentially...
You want to say that word again?
Pinnacle.
Is that how you always do it? Or is that like a slip?
No, that's how I say it. Is it... Well, let me see if I can get it right. Do people say it pinnacle?
I mean, that's how I say it.
Okay.
And it sounds like, based on the faint giggling, that's how Bacon says it too.
Yeah, he's nodding along enthusiastically with you. All right. Well, when you reach the pinnacle of TV writing, you could have an Emmy that has your name on it.
No, I don't. I don't want that. Thank you. Thank you, but no, thank you.
would you say that you, which was more exciting, when you saw your own New York Times bestselling book on a shelf in a real bookstore or being nominated for an Emmy?
I think the bookstore probably, because I spent so much of my life growing up literally in a Barnes & Noble. Didn't work there. That would have been a normal thing. But like, as the second I got my driver's license, I would go to the Barnes & Noble on Route 35 in Homedale, New Jersey, probably every night. I would get coffee and read and wander around and look at books and sometimes invite friends to come over and also quietly read around me. Like, it wasn't a party. It wasn't a social thing. I was like, hey, I'm gonna be spending the next 4 hours at Barnes & Noble until they close reading. Does anyone want to come and also do that? And some friends would, and
that's shocking to me.
The rest of us grew apart for some weird reason. I can't tell. And I feel like there were a couple times where I would like tell my parents, I'm going out to Barnes & Noble, and they would show up to confirm I was doing that. Like, they wanted to see if they can catch me in a lie, but they were just like, oh, no, he's really doing it.
Motherfucker's still really there.
He's really just sitting there reading fucking essays.
Dan, are you going to go buy a tuxedo? Because you might.
What should I do? My mom said that I was going to rent one. My mom said maybe I should buy one.
Yeah, you should go buy one, because I think also, you know, thinking of the best, like, you guys might get nominated again in following years, and it'd be nice to have a.
And
really
you'll still
nice
be the same size.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You won't let this go to your head. Yeah. Like,
but like, separate from that, I don't know. I mean, I haven't priced buying versus renting a tuxedo, but I also buying seems so forward, because I'm somewhere in my 30s right now. I always forget. And I think I've worn tuxedos for prom and like maybe a school band thing, but like, I haven't worn a tuxedo in 15 years, two
wow.
decades. I don't know. Like, I don't go to a lot of things that require tuxedos.
I've rented a tuxedo in my adult life, and I'll tell you that when you rent a tuxedo, it's fine at first, but then as the night goes on, like, the suit matures around you, and it opens up all the sense of everyone who ever wore it.
Okay. Yeah, and they give you like Frankenstein's club shoes too. You should get a tuxedo.
Okay, maybe I'll do that then. But anyway, let's move on to like the show. Now that our weird intro is done, 15 minutes and 40 seconds into the show. Hey, Soren, I got a quick question for you.
Shoot.
What would you do if your city, like your entire city, suddenly lost power? I'm going to give you time to think about that. It's relevant to me right now because New York, we're just sort of coming off the tail end of a massive heat wave. And last week, the power went out in a huge part of Manhattan where I live. I was at a movie seeing Stuber, because I felt like seeing a movie in the middle of the day, and Stuber was what was playing. So I went to go see Stuber with Kumail and Bautista and Natalie Morales and probably some others.
It's cool that you and Kumail are on first name basis.
Well, you guys are absolutely. Yes, that's born entirely out of how cool we are, and not out of my deep fear of getting his last name wrong.
Nanjiani.
Yeah.
I just go for it.
Sorry?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So about the movie, and the power goes out, and we all leave the theater. We talk to the people who work there, and they're like, yeah, you can get a refund if you stick around and wait till the power gets on. We can't just give you refunds without access to technology. So I just leave. And for a brief time, it's very scary because it's not just the movie theater. Street lights are out. Businesses are dark. People are out in the street looking around at things. There are a lot of, God bless New York, a lot of New Yorkers, like random citizens who are directing traffic, because why not? And let's keep people safe. And I'm like G-chatting and texting friends and family, but because everyone is doing the exact same thing, you're not getting a lot of responses. The internet isn't super clear at the time because everyone's doing the same thing at the same time. So I'm just like, this is probably heat related, or you know, I'm texting my friends like, hey, if this is a 9/11, please let me know, because I can't find anything on the internet. So like, someone If anyone can see this, please text me and let me know if it's a 9/11. And it wasn't a 9/11, which is nice. And I get back to my apartment because I wanted to get my dog, Jackson, out of the hot apartment. And we just sat in the garden of my building like everybody else. It ended up being like a fun party because a ton of people were like, well, we could still use the barbecue. So they were cooking food and people brought out like their wine and beer that they didn't want to go bad in the fridge. And we just had a very nice communal picnic among strangers and just sat looking around at New York until the power went on about 3 hours later. But I realized it was very pleasant, but I didn't have a 24-hour plan. Like if the power, my entire plan was the power is going to come back on because some adult will turn it on somewhere. I didn't really have like, oh, I wake up in the morning and the power is still not out. Then what do I do? I don't have that plan, I realized. And I was very nervous about that. You seem like the kind of person who would have that plan.
Yeah. Let me just say, first of all, a power outage is such a charming disaster. And I love that that's the one you were forced to deal with. I've been in power outages before, and it's really, it does, like, it rallies everyone together. Everyone's like, oh, we'll light candles. Oh, what an opportunity to, like, do something new. It is, I can see how that would be awful going into the next business day when everyone's food starts to spoil, businesses start dealing with the consequences of that, car accidents. But,
right.
Yeah, I for sure have, I'm ready. We have earthquakes here, and yeah. I am, God, it seems awful to say that I'm excited for it, but man, am I ready.
But that's how you feel. I also, like, when I lived in LA, I had multiple bug out bags, just like, this is a bag that's going to contain everything that I'm going to need to survive for a little while. And I had like one in my apartment, one in my car, and I think maybe a second one in my apartment just in case. But and I still have them, but I realized that they were based very much on me also having a car, and I haven't had a car in like a year and a half now, and I have no plans on getting one. But my plan was always surely like, oh, something is going wrong. I have everything I need in my backpack. I could take my dog, get in a car, and drive somewhere safe. Yeah. Now I don't really have that plan.
Yeah. So for Colleen's birthday, just to give you a glimpse inside of my life, for her birthday, I gave her and me bug out bags in our car with full equipment, like gas siphons, everything we could possibly need. And I got Ronan a little, it's one called Lady Bug Out Bag, which is this group of women who create a bug out bags for kids.
That's so cool.
And when I did the research for this, I got really down a rabbit hole and like in what I thought I would need and everything that I could put in it. And got very excited and then bought a bunch of things. And now I just can't use them. It's basically buying a bunch of things and then putting them away forever with the hope that they go bad. Like that's right, the best case scenario. I can't get behind that. So every time we find out that there's an earthquake in LA, my first instinct is like, yes, I'm so ready for
How
this.
How was the, you had two bad earthquakes at the beginning of this month. How are they for you?
Not anything at all. I mean, I think maybe we were in the car for them or something. You never feel an earthquake when you're driving, unless I guess it'd have to be really big. And throughout LA, I think some people felt them, but there was no catastrophic damage in Los Angeles proper. And so nothing. I didn't get anything from that. I don't know. It's certainly not the last one. So there'll be more.
Okay. Well, that was my question about blackouts. I guess I there's a thing I take from my father, or that my father has certainly given me. Literally, he frequently just gives me flashlights. That's a thing that he's been doing for a very long time, many years, for me and my two older brothers. Just give you, like, sometimes cheap ones, sometimes nice ones, sometimes it's for Christmas, sometimes it's just, he has a habit whenever he sees you. Like we went fishing not too long ago, and he likes to show up with something knowing that they're going to be cheap things. Like he'll drop by with a bag of like, this is a fishing magazine, this is a lottery scratch off, and here is a flashlight. I bought them all at the same gas station, obviously. It was like a very classic dad thing to do.
That's a really good bit. It's the equivalent of a rich dad, but this one is tucking a flashlight into your shirt pocket every time he sees you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's wonderful. So you have a lot then. You're prepared at least on that front.
Yeah, I have a lot, and I like that very much. And like it became a nice small flex when there was a storm in LA years ago, maybe 2011, 2010. Do you remember the marathon where it rained like crazy? Yes. The LA marathon that year?
Yes.
Yeah. It rained like crazy, and the power went out where I was living, which was Sherman Oaks at the time. And I had two friends, Dolly and Jamie, visiting me, and the power went out. And I felt like such an adult because, like, oh, don't worry, I have 700 flashlights, and just like lit the entire apartment and gave everyone a flashlight that they could use to get to and from wherever they wanted to go within the apartment or within the apartment building. And like immediately texted my dad the next day and was like, I understand now. Flashlights.
Yeah, see, I've got an isobutane stove. I've got food for 3 days for the whole family. I've even got some MREs for the family. I've got, yeah. So when I was like looking for, I was just talking to the women who do this lady bug out bag because they had some really cool stuff in this kid one. And I was like, oh, that reminds me that I need some other things in mine. And they're like, you should have a crowbar. And I was like, oh, I should probably also have a hatchet of some sort. And so I'm buying a lot of these things and I go to Home Depot to get a hatchet. And I realize that they have straight up weapons at Home Depot. There are some amazing, terrifying things there. They've got machetes there.
What do you
there.
Mean? Like a thing that could be used as a weapon?
Or absolutely. Like- yeah, 100%. They've got these big serrated machetes. Like, I don't know if you had Ninja Turtle toys when you were a kid, but the types of weapons that the bad guys would come with, that's at Home Depot right now.
No, sorry, I didn't have Ninja Turtle toys. You weren't listening. It's only flashlights. It's been flashlights my whole life.
And so, yeah, I'm not entirely sure it's legal to have the things that we have in our cars right now. But, yeah, I've got a bunch of money in $1 bills, like $100, $200 in $1 bills so that you can tip people along the way. Or, like, mm-hmm. if credit card machines go down, you can only give a certain amount. I'm ready, man.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Do you have anything that... like, I know people, I can't remember if this is a bit that someone did or a true thing that I saw on some crazy...
That's my life.
Like, doomsday prepper thing. Like, hoarding a lot of batteries because you think they're going to be the new currency. Is there something that you think that you're holding on to because you think, oh, when the apocalypse happens, this will be very valuable, so I will keep this to trade it? Or is it just dollar bills?
No, I haven't really thought of a bartering system yet. I guess that wasn't really a consideration of mine. I have this assumption in my head that it will be like a blackout where everyone comes together, that it won't be immediately the Walking Dead where there are factions all fighting against each other. I think that the first right. thing that happens is people's altruism kicks in and they'll want to help each other. And
because that's what people want to do. No one is, the majority of people, we're not waiting for society collapse
right.
for society to collapse. We built society because it's better than the alternative. So if The Walking Dead happened, we wouldn't just be like, oh, finally, now I can kill people and rob and murder and assault people. It's like, no. You're going to find some people and like try to build schools and roads again. That's because that's better and we want that.
The Jason Pargin, who works at Cracked still and famously known as David Wong, he's a nihilistic, very pessimistic guy, but with one exception, which is in an apocalyptic scenario, he's confident that everyone will come together. He thinks the idea of having a gun for a apocalyptic scenario is ludicrous because it's so pointless, more pointless than like having a big paperweight in that time. And I think he's right. I think that I don't have a gun in the house. I don't have, and when I say that I have weapons in these bags, I mean I have things that are functionally useful that could also be weapons.
Right, but, yeah, that makes sense to me. I think, well, I admire that. I think where it became like starkly terrifying to me is thinking ahead about having a family. Like even the bug out bag that I have now is very much, I have a small dog that I can carry under my arm and run with somewhere. If I had a disaster and had a kid to worry about, that's a whole other scenario. I think about like the time my car broke down in Baker, California. I took care of that myself. It was terrible, but I did it. I, you know, call a tow truck person, go to Baker, California, go to the mechanics, deal with them, find a way to get to my destination, even if I don't have a car anymore. I feel like I did that all very well and very successfully, but there's an alternate version of me where I turn around and I'm like, oh shit, I left my kid in the fucking desert. immediately become like primal, every man out for himself kind of thing when there's a disaster. And that maybe means I'm not ready for a child, Soren.
I don't know, man. I think it just nature kicks in when you finally have one. I think I was the exact same way. I mean, I was pretty confident that I could take care of my wife, but in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, she's dragging me down. I could just go. But the first time I really felt the fear of having a kid in a big situation like that was we were at the Women's March in 2016, and he was in a stroller because he was so young, and there were so many people there, and there was a big, you know, everybody's shoulder to shoulder, and people could see that there was a gap in the middle, but they couldn't see that there was a stroller, and that's why there was a gap. So mm-hmm. everyone started going towards that spot. And then it became even more condensed around us once they realized there was a stroller there. And it became immediately obvious to me that I don't have a way out of here. And like, if something goes wrong, there's no way to get out with him. And so that's the first time that I got very scared of like, oh, I'm not entirely prepared to take care of another person.
Right. Especially because, you know, like if push came to shove, you could be safe if you needed to.
Yeah.
You could find a way out of there, but you can't find a way out with you and your son.
Right. That actually
is scary.
That reminds me, Dan, I have a quick question for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. situations where you have to be in a big crowd and everybody's kind of feeling the same thing at the same time. I mean, like concerts and women's marches and AIDS walks and things like that. Do you get wrapped up in that? Do you get swept up in the emotion of it? Or is it just you're there to be another head?
I don't get wrapped up in the sense that I moved to participate vocally or like change myself in any real way.
Do you do the chants? Like when the chants run down the line?
Very emotional at the Women's March watching just like even the idea of the amount of people that were there. Even though I'm physically very uncomfortable and the Women's March in 2016, like you're not getting any cell reception and you're really crammed into a crowd. I didn't go with anyone. There are a bunch of people I knew there, but I showed up on my own and I'm just like shoulder to shoulder with strangers. And I'm very unhappy about that. But like just seeing the amount of people who showed up and the diversity of it and the amount of work that people put into like signs and they're doing chants and people brought drums and they're doing things like that's very moving, especially at that time when you're following the inauguration, which was for certainly the two of us, I don't know about Bacon, very depressing, very unhappy about about Donald Trump's inauguration.
So Bacon, don't nice speak on that. We'll just assume. Like,
as hard as that was for a lot of people, it didn't stop us from being part of this thing. I get emotional about that. But at the end of the day, I don't love my chant voice, so I don't do it. I think it's stupid to chant. I mean, like, do it if you think you sound cool and meaningful being like, this is what democracy looks like. That's do it. That's just not me. Like, I'm not a loud person. I'm not going to do it. And I don't like clapping. I don't like chanting. And I'm here and I support you, but like, don't make me do a voice or anything.
It's a real art form. I mean, it's like real skill to be good in that situation and to go with it 100% and to do a chant and do it with the body language and the conviction that it needs to not look silly. And I'm watching everyone around me and I'm amazed by the people who actually have it. But I'm the same way. I don't want to, when a chant starts, I immediately turn inward. I'm like, oh, I don't, I'm not a chanter. That's
right.
If I do it, you're going to tell that I'm not a chanter.
Being immediately aware of the moment, it's hard for me to not be funny, even if there's no audience. If it's just me in my head, or just me who's like close enough to me to hear me, I can still pretend there's a little camera on me that is capturing my reaction. When people start chants, they're like, "What do we want?" And everyone knows the same thing to say, and I'm just, you know, living my weird Larry David existence where I'm just like, a number of systemic things that it's hard to really boil down to a single chant. When do we want it? Oof, gosh, 30 years ago? I don't know. That's a hard question. Like, it, no progress starts on a single day. So like it grows by inches, it dies by feet. I'm so sorry. I wish I could tell you. I feel like you want me to say now, but I mean, we can't start progress because we're here in downtown LA. We don't even have a cell reception. These are things that I'm mumbling to myself at the Women's March because it's abstractly funny to me that a person like me is stuck in a chant.
Yeah. I feel the same way at concerts. I've never enjoyed a concert, I don't think. Maybe when I was...
I've never enjoyed a concert. That's
when
so
I was 18
sad.
Years old, I think I enjoyed a concert. And it was because I was so swept up in like in the emotion of it. It was my first punk show I'd ever been to and seeing what people do at punk shows and like there's a mosh pit. And I was very excited about all that. And the idea of at the end of it having other people's beer and sweat on me was like, this is amazing. We're all one. But then after that, I don't think I've enjoyed a single one. I've been to several concerts and every single time I'm very much like, this is okay. This is good. We should, I mean, they'll wrap this up soon, right? That would be nice. Oh, everyone, please, please stop cheering. They will do an encore if you do that. I've seen this before. You got to stop.
I know this move. I enjoy concerts, but I also, there's two different kinds of concerts that I go to. I'll go to like small local shows where it's not a famous band. It's just, I just want to see live local music from local artists and have a clear run towards the exit if I need to. And the like bigger concerts that I go to are, I think, almost exclusively like theaters. Like I'll see Ben Folds or Tim Minchin at a theater where it's understood that we all sit and
oh,
clap when the songs are done and not. It's very nice.
That's the dream.
Yes.
A concert where you just sit. The Hollywood Bowl, I get. The Hollywood Bowl is a place where people go and they get their reserved seats. They sit down, they bring their wine, they drink it there, they clap when stuff is over. But like when people start getting up and really getting into it, the Hollywood Bowl, I think to myself, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. We all have our reserved seats.
No, I don't care for any of that. My ideal concert is Ben Folds addressing the crowd and being like, let's the back row. You can start and get your cars now. I know the parking lot's going to be a nightmare. Parking garage is going to be terrible. So like, if we just like single file line out and like, I'll play for a little while longer, but nothing huge. Yeah.
This will be like wedding tables going to a buffet. You start in the back. Yeah. I honestly I think that even a small concert is maybe even worse because I'm so hyper aware of my job as an audience member of like what I'm supposed to be doing. And what they want is for you to be everybody kind of into it, everybody feeling it. And so if I'm just standing there and looking at the band, I'm not doing enough, but I don't want to do any more than that. And so it becomes a real conundrum for me. I feel like I'm in a real pickle when I'm at any concert because I don't want to dance. That's a weird thing to do too. I don't really want to sing along because I've been next to people who sing along and I don't like them much. And there's just no, I haven't really landed on what I can do that's helpful to them. Like that's also,
right. It's weird because like you want to be good, but you're also like, you're not on drugs, you know, you're not going to go to a concert and be on drugs and just like be comfortable being sweaty and moving, which visually looks very nice from a band's perspective. If you just have like a writhing mass of people who are feeling the music, but that's not you. And that's not me either. And
I think maybe that's also, what it is. It's drugs. It's people are like, yeah, that's
maybe,
what gets
maybe
you over the
drugs.
Hump.
I don't know. I think we went to Michael and I and you did as well down in South by Southwest years past would go to like nerdcore hip hop shows. And a thing that I learned about nerdcore hip hop shows in those moments was that they're incredibly participatory. I don't know if this is true of all hip hop shows, but it's very much like, hey, in this next song, I'm going to say a thing and then I'm going to need you guys to say this thing. And I'm going to prompt you what it is in advance so that every time the chorus comes, you say it back to me. And that happened like 12 songs in a row. And it's like, sir, I'm clapping for you and I already hate clapping. Don't give me an assignment for each thing. In my mind, music is a feel thing. I'm here to let it wash over me and fill me with feelings. I don't want to have to remember that every time in the chorus you say, quote the Raven, and I say, nevermore. I just don't. I don't want to roll in this at all.
Oh, man, you
if
saw
you
Poe
needed
in concert?
Someone to say that, get a backup singer to do it for you, please.
Yeah.
Nice. This is the episode where I was trying to turn around my grump persona. Well, so that's music. Soren, I have another quick question for you. That might be a little bit longer. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever tried meditating, and have you ever, or have you ever like been driven to try it? Is that an impulse that you've ever had? And I will, as usual, give you time to think about this while I, as usual, tell a story about me.
This is how all interactions should go from now on.
This came up recently. I was talking to coworkers because a coworker was asking me about fishing and why I like fishing so much and how it's immediately taken over part of my life. And part of it is just like, you know, I found a new hobby and I'm obsessed with it right now. But another part of it is I'm always looking for things that take up a lot of time that aren't work and keep me off a phone. That's like a very important thing for me to do. And it used to be running and I sort of fell off that a little bit. And it's been biking and it's been making clocks in the past. And it's just the newest thing because I'm always looking for something. Because left to my own devices, I will sit in front of a computer and work or just be professionally online forever. So I'm always looking for these things. And that's why fishing is the new drug. And he said, I understand that completely. That's why I meditate. He meditates for hours every single day. And it gives him that kind of like peace and distance and stability that I find in fishing. And I really can't meditate. Like I've tried it just like Googling how to meditate and trying to do it in my apartment. I inevitably feel very stupid and get nothing out of it. Years ago, I went to a church that specializes in guided meditation ceremonies where you're meditating in like a huge group setting. It's like a 2.5 hour affair. And I did it because this is a period in my life where I was going partially blind from stress and was trying to do anything under the sun to de-stress. And it did fucking nothing for me. The whole time I'm sitting there and I can feel the energy of people around me who seem to be successfully meditating. And I'm sitting there the whole time. If I have a mantra at all, it's, this isn't working. This isn't working. This isn't working. I'm not meditating. Right now, not meditating. 5 minutes ago, wasn't meditating. Gonna shoot my shot for the future. 10 minutes from now, not gonna meditate. So that's my experience with meditation.
Yeah, I'm in a pretty similar boat. I was forced into meditation a few times with in acting classes. Meditation is a big part of that. And in sports, when I was in high school, they really thought meditation would help out. And I tried it. Yeah, we would do it. You know, they were throwing everything at the wall then, though. They were like, that's when the area where
were you guys like really bad?
No, I think they just wanted us more focused. And that you do these things as a team. And no, even if they're a placebo, you're doing it as a team. And that's automatically helping. But I have tried meditation. I've sort of tried it on my own a couple of times. But I don't really know what I'm doing because I haven't bothered to really look it up. But the times that I've been instructed to do it, I got absolutely nothing out of it. I got absolutely nothing. The other day I was talking to somebody who is a meditator and about this exact same subject. And as we were talking, they careened into a different direction. And I told them something that I do at night while I'm lying in bed. And they're like, you know, what you're describing is meditation. And I was like, oh, okay, shit. So what I do when I'm lying in bed, if I can't sleep because I'm thinking about something, let's say I'm writing a script. I visualize putting it in a manila envelope and putting it away in a cubby. And I'll be like, I'll just deal with that later. And then when it comes back out again, and I inevitably think about it again, I do the exact same process. And I put it in a manila envelope and I put it in a cubby. And I do that, wow, you know, like 40 times a night if it's something that I'm really thinking hard about. And eventually it just goes away. And somebody was like, you know what you're doing? That's like a form of meditation. And I was like, oh, okay. So I guess kind of is my answer.
So like, is it a separate from when you're trying to go to sleep, when you can't sleep, is the idea of meditation or the idea, like the promise of what it's supposed to give you, is that something that you feel like you need generally or that you would seek out generally?
No. I really dislike the idea of it. I dislike the idea of burning that much time in my day. So having a kid, I'm sure that people who have even like two kids or three kids would laugh at this, but I feel like I have absolutely no time at all. I see him barely at all on a normal work day. You see him with your kid a little bit in the morning. You see your kid a little bit at night, and you want to savor those moments. You want to get home as quickly as you can. You want to spend that time with them. And then the rest of your night is occupied with, you know, eating dinner, or I go and work out at night. There are these things that I need to do to still be a human. And right. Meditation is just not on the table. It's not one of the things that I feel like I need. And I don't feel like I'm suffering because of it in any way. I don't have any sort of big stresses as far as I know. And it just feels like a big, if I was to carve out that time, I would feel really bad at the end of a month of doing that. I'd be like, I could have done so many other things.
Yeah. That sounds like my brother David too, who also has a young son. He's got a 2-year-old and works a job and also works out and is like an athletic person, that the idea of meditation to him is probably insane. That even if he got something out of it, if he meditated every day for 2 hours, 6 months would go by and he'd be like, I could have fucking learned to play guitar in that time. What am I doing?
Yeah, it's such a sunk cost investment where like you have to give yourself to that. And I'm not. And then it's the worst kind of investment because you're thinking about the investment the entire time. You have nothing to do but sit there and think about the investment. So it's not going to work.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't work for me, is that I'm just sitting there in my head thinking about, hey, Daniel, is this working? No, it's not. Just shut up. Shut up for a second. Just let me meditate. Okay, you doing it yet? No, shut the fuck up. I know what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, clear your mind. No, I know. Just get out of here. But I can't. And so it just becomes me yelling at myself, which actually enhances the stress, if you can believe that much.
Yeah,
because now I'm just sitting there thinking about how I'm doing meditation wrong.
Bacon, do you do meditation?
No, I feel similar to you, Soren. The first time I tried it, I got convinced to go to a guided meditation class, and I found out later I had like fundamentally misunderstood the point of it, because I had come out of it, and I'm generally kind of an anxious person sometimes, and the person I was with was like, do you feel better? Do you feel more relaxed? And I told them, yeah, I do. It was a wonderful set aside time to like work through a lot of problems I had. And she just looked horrified. And she was like, that's the opposite of what you're supposed to do. And I was just amazed that I thought that was the point of it, was to like put like serious thought behind issues and utilize the time appropriately. And I've since then tried to do it the real way, and I have like very little success doing
Shit,
it.
Shit, Bacon, that feels like that kind of meditation I could get behind. You should start a business like that, where meditation is just study hall.
Just a quiet room.
And I just get to think about
it. You spend 3 hours and I walk out and I'm like, got it. I got my screenplay. Yeah. I know what it's going.
I would like that a lot. Going. That feels very useful.
Yeah.
I'll sign up for that.
All right. Well, I think we're heading towards the end here, unless there's...
No, we're at time.
We're at time? Okay, great. Well, Soren, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I do. I've hijacked the outros from this point forward, and I'm going to be doing
those. That's right. Yeah, we should give the audience a little bit of clarity. We recorded an episode 9 that the reason this episode is late this week is because the episode that we recorded that was supposed to go this week was unlistenable because I was tired, and Soren gave me a lot of opportunities to participate, and I turned them all down. So we had to record again. But at the end of that episode that you'll never hear, Soren promised that he would do the outros from now on with all of the social accounts. And I really appreciate that, because
that episode was a really humbling experience for me too, because it made me realize how quickly I could never carry an episode.
Listening back, I felt so bad because you teed me up for so many conversation points that I just was not interested in being a part of. You're like, Dan, do you like weekends? I'm like, no, not particularly.
Soren said at one point, Dan, you have an opinion on that? And you went, nope.
Yep. That's right. I was trying to punish you, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right. All right, well, I'm going to do the outros, but before I want to find them here, I just, Dan, want to give you some time. You at one point told me, well, I know that you hate
letting old adages that are wrong stand. And you said that you'd create a list of jobs that are objectively harder than being a mom. And I just wanted you to have an opportunity to roll those out.
Jobs that are harder than being a mom?
Yeah, I mean, so many people say it's the hardest job in the world, and you've always said, no, sir. Here right, are several that are harder.
Do say that. And so you're going to give me some space now to give that list?
Yes.
Okay, great. That sounds good. I want to say male nurse. I'm going to say principal. Again, parenthetically, male. I want to say, if you go to like a Home Depot, there's a guy who has to man the station where it puts the paint can in a machine and it shakes the paint because the paint needs to get mixed properly to get the color that you want. And it's a very scary machine. It shakes violently. Similarly, if you go to a sports authority, the machine that puts the spool onto a reel, because you do that with a machine, that can knock you on your toes if you're not careful, and then you have to start from scratch. And the man who works that is also, I would rank as a hero above mom, which isn't a job.
That's perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. This show is called Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Daniel at @DOB_INC. That's DOB Inc. Soren at SOREN_LTD. You can follow Michael Schroer at Make Me Bacon, Please. That's Make Me Bacon and then PLS.
Man, all one I am word. Reminded why we rarely say his full name on this podcast.
You can email us, although I don't recommend it, at QQ with Soren and Daniel at gmail.com. Not to be confused with Quick Question with Soren and Dan. Here's another one. Instagram is QQ_with_Soren_and_Daniel. So don't do that with a Dan, because that's a totally different podcast.
No, you'd hate to follow that Instagram.
You can also, you could follow it, but the only thing I can say for it is that it's not going to take up much room on your feed. Because nobody mans that. I've never even looked at it. Okay, you can follow, find, or hire our producer and sound engineer and editor Vincent at siliconbeachpodcast.com. And you can follow. You can also you can give us money at Patreon. You go to patreon.com/quickquestion. You can go and give us money for this podcast if you so feel inclined. I mean, you don't have to. It's fine.
We got to move that one up top. So far back.
To tell you a good joke that someone had on Twitter about our Patreon, Soren.
What did they say?
Because I was doing my fun bit of being a grump who doesn't support this podcast, and I said you can donate to us on Patreon if you want. Frankly, I think there are better ways that you could spend your money. And someone on Twitter, I wish I kept her name, she replied to me and said, "You mean like $60 on a candle?" Very good bit. Very good joke.
You got just dunked on.
Well, yep.
I find that. She sounds like she deserves all the Patreon money. Can we give it to her, Bacon?
I don't have the password.
From now on, we're gonna be giving out our Patreon money to the people who burn us the best.
Soren, that's a good bit, but it's stepped a little bit on Bacon's bit, which I also love that he doesn't have the password to our Patreon account, so no one has it. So just money that is piling up that we can't access.
Patreon has it. I assume they use it as a bank. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, bye.